Well, in the Middle East these days, the U.S. military has used drones with great effect, more properly called UAS or UAV for unmanned aerial systems or vehicle. Their use on American soil for more peaceful purposes has been a source of controversy. UAVs have raised concerns of safety and ethics, and the Federal Aviation Administration has been known to step in and halt their use, as it did when the University of Missouri developed its Missouri Drone Journalism Program. But Mizzou is not down and out. Its College of Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resources was recently granted a certificate of authorization by the FAA to operate a UAS. Joining us now to talk about the applications of these vehicles in agriculture are Dusty Walter. He's superintendent of the Werdack Research Center at the University of Missouri. And Dusty, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Rory Paul is also with us. He's CEO of Volt Aerial Robotics. That's a consultancy based in St. Louis that develops, leases, and sells aerial systems. Rory, good morning to you, too.
Steve, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Dusty, I have to ask, after seeing what the journalism school went through, what hoops did you have to jump through to get that certificate of authorization?
Well, it's a bit of a misnomer. I was working with a group of individuals, including some folks from St. Louis University and Missouri Rolla Science and Technology, and they had the primary interest of flying a drone or a UAV, UAS, and they were looking for airspace where they wouldn't interfere with public, and it was really wide open space. And the Werdack farm fit that bill with 1,200 acres. It's down in the south central part of the state, Ozark, and has a very low population density. So they approached me, and really the Rolla Science and Technology submitted the COA.
So the certificate of authorization you're talking
certificate
about.
Certificate of authorization, that's correct. They submitted that to the FAA and got approval to use the Werdack farm as their flight site.
And that certificate you've got, Dusty, that covers how many drones or how many UASs?
The UAS is very specific to one that's called a Maverick, so it's a specific fixed-wing aircraft. Our hope is to add to this as we build sort of on the success that we currently have.
Well, Rory, let's get into this a bit because I know there's frustration over the FAA guidelines. Explain, if you can, the difference between Dusty's folks flying a UAS over a soybean field to photograph it for a farmer to use, and as you put it, you know, me sitting down with some guy on the back porch having a beer and flying his remote-controlled helicopter in the backyard.
Well, Steve, from a technical aspect, there's very little difference.
Yeah.
You would be using the same technology and flying in this airspace. The difference comes in is, as a hobbyist, you would be within your rights to fly your UAS, your drone, and recreate. The real difference becomes is if you wanted to charge that farmer to fly over the field and take images, for example. And that currently is not permitted by the FAA.
If I wanted to charge, meaning what exactly?
So let's say that you were an agronomist and you would like to fly a small UAV, a small rotary wing system, and map that farmer's fields. You are currently not permitted to do that because it goes against the FAA's policy against commercial use of UAV systems.
So again, when it comes to the actual vehicle use, what makes one, Rory, a hobbyist toy and another a UAS?
Steve, there's absolutely technically no difference.
Wow.
We could sell you a jet-powered $100,000 military-grade UAV system, and you could recreate with that system as soon as you wanted to charge $1 for a service. You would be in violation of FAA policy.
I gotcha. Well, we invited the FAA to join this conversation to explain its regulations. Our invitation was declined with the explanation that the FAA is currently revising those regulations, and until that process is complete, the FAA is not going to discuss them. Rory, how do you see the revisions leaning more towards the rules that hobbyists have to follow, or will those for UAS remain as restrictive as they are right now?
Steve, unfortunately, this process has been going on since approximately 2006, and there's no end game in sight. Mm. I have a feeling that the FAA will have relatively restrictive policy in place for commercial operations.
Mm.
But at the same time, unfortunately, they're not regulating the sale of this technology. So you can actually purchase the technology and operate this as a hobbyist with very little restriction at this moment in time.
Why do you think, Rory, it's taking the FAA so long to deal with this?
I believe it's a historical issue. I think that the FAA has been used to dealing with technology, aircraft technology that develops at a relatively slow pace. We are seeing literally in a matter of a very short time frame, technology that is being placed in the public's hands that allows them to enter the national airspace literally in the last 3 years. It's just exploded, and there's an absolute proliferation of this technology.
Yeah. We're talking about the use of drones, and if you want to join our conversation, perhaps with a question, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. How much weight, maybe we come back to you, Dusty, for this. How much weight do you think public opinion carries? Because the Associated Press released new poll results just this morning that showed that by a 2-to-1 margin, those who had an opinion opposing using drones for commercial purposes, only 21% favored commercial use of drones. How much of that is going to be a factor here, do you think?
Well, I think anytime we're talking about Washington and regulations, the court of the public has a role to play there. But certainly you've asked a valid question, and I guess it's all about demographics there. I think the urban areas probably view the use of UASs for commercial purposes a little different than the agricultural parts of the country. And if even in agriculture, and Rory, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but currently if a farmer purchases one of these UASs and then flies it over his crops and takes images that impact his management and productivity, he's deemed commercial, even though he just flew that over his own personal property. And so, but again, I think the difference between urban and rural environments and use of this equipment, whether it's to take pictures of corn or taking pictures of people, are very distinct and different. And so certainly I would hope that regulation might reflect that.
Well, Rory, don't you think that folks in the cities, they don't have any practical use for them, at least most of the time, and people think of drones, they think of warfare, don't they? And that's why this AP poll showed that, again, by a 2-to-1 margin, those who had an opinion opposed using drones for commercial purposes, that doesn't surprise me a whole lot.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, and I would concur with Dusty's assessment. I think that there is this distinct urban versus rural approach. I think there's also a very serious lack of education on what drones are. If you consider that every radio-controlled airplane is technically a drone, we have thousands of these drones flying, you know, in the United States on a daily basis by hobbyists.
And your point there is what then?
That people have been recreating or using these systems. What's really happening is that they're really becoming consumer products now, whereas for a long time they were in the realm of hobbyists. And now they're really becoming a consumer device that people are seeing them more and more. And I think that this is actually heightening the public's awareness to these systems or to the potential abuse of these systems.
I was going to say, isn't the potential abuse of drones fairly Hi, Rory. I mean, I can just imagine problems with these things getting in the way of commercial air traffic at one point or another. You know that's going to happen at some point, isn't it?
It definitely is, Steve. It's actually a wonder that we haven't had a fatality already. And I don't like to give people ideas, but it literally the possibility that these systems can be used nefariously is there. And there's really a lack of education on the part of the FAA. I mean, every hobby store should have a pamphlet with the FAA's usage guidelines, but it just doesn't exist.
Well, when's that going to happen? And how concerned should people be about all this stuff, Dusty Walter, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think it is a concern. It's valid. But, you know, one of the challenges we've got as a society is just how quickly technology is developing
yes.
around. And I have a great – I have more concerns as I'm using my computer to do banking and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I have more concern about privacy issues on my computer and my iPhone and smartphones, tablets, and everything else than I do currently with the UASs. But I do think it is an educational process, as Rory pointed out, that it is a technology – with great potential to assist. At the same time, there's potential for abuses, but we need to focus on the benefits that it can provide, whether that's with police and fire operations or in agriculture.
Because the potential is really unlimited, isn't it, Dusty? I mean, you can just begin coming up with one use after another if you spend much time thinking about it.
Well, sure. Rory and I are a member of a group. One of the board members on that is from a power company. And so they're interested in, you know, if you've got power outages, how important is it to each of us that our electricity be turned back on in a timely fashion after a storm?
Mm-hmm.
If we can use UAVs, UASs to actually fly down power lines and identify where problems exist
yeah.
to rectify those, those are real benefits to us.
Again, we're talking about UAVs, are a fancy name for drones, also known as UASs. Your questions welcome. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here again. Rory, not to belabor the scary possibility here, but what kind of threat would a drone pose to a commercial airplane? Because I don't think of drones as heavy or necessarily very large. So what kind of threat do they pose?
Practically, it's a real unknown at this moment in time. Nobody's done any real testing what would happen if one of these objects would go through an engine.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another threat. These systems can actually be used to close down airspace. So just their mere presence near a large airport would shut that airport down.
Meaning that if an air traffic controller found out that a drone was in the vicinity, he or she would begin to say, hey, we can't have planes flying through here. We got to shut down this field at this time.
It is quite possible. And you can imagine the economic impact of something like that on a locality.
Mike called us this to ask this question. What's the power source for these vehicles? Dusty, how would you answer that?
Well, most of that we're dealing with currently are battery. Technically, some of the larger ones, I guess, can have a gas, like a small gas engine powered. But most of what we're talking about in these smaller UASs are battery powered, which from that standpoint also limits their flight time.
How long can they fly?
Well, Rory is probably better equipped to address that question. Rory?
So on the fixed-wing UAVs, you can look from anywhere from 45 minutes to a couple of hours. On the small rotary wing systems, quadcopters, you're looking at between, let's say, 15 minutes to 35 minutes, depending on the airframe.
Yeah. Dusty, you know, what experiments will you be conducting once you're up and flying there at the University of Missouri? What do you see doing with these things?
Well, I think the real potential of these is not just in flying an aircraft or an aerial vehicle, but what we can carry on that. And so primarily right now we're looking at imagery and the analysis of images, but not just a high-resolution picture, but also looking at different light spectrums and what that can tell us about plant health, plant stress, and potentially how we can mitigate plant stress and improve plant health.
You're losing me here. We talk about images and plant health. How are photographs going to help you with that?
Well, again, we might be looking at different light spectrums, infrared, for an example. And so the light that comes back to the camera off of that plant and how much of that light transmits through the leaf or is reflected back gives us an idea of the health of that plant.
And plants, you're talking about what, corn?
It could be corn, soybean. It could be forages for grazing livestock on. So additionally, you can also just use regular high-resolution pictures to look and see differences in plant development. They may be tied to soil differences, but it could also be moisture differences or insect problems.
Yeah. And, Dusty, where can you fly this drone at the University of Missouri? How big is your designated area here?
Our farm is approximately 1,200 acres, and a part of the certificate of authorization, we actually put in the GPS coordinates of our research farm, the boundary of that farm, and so we're relegated to just flying over top of the WERDAC Research Center.
How high does do your planes fly?
We've got a ceiling limit of 400 feet above the ground. So we'll be below 400 feet.
How easy is it, Dusty, when you fly one of these things to take this drone or UAV well beyond 400 feet up to, I mean, can you go to 5,000 feet? Can you go to 10,000 feet?
Well, I don't have a good answer for you on that. Rory may know more about the capabilities, but within the programming, we have a ground control station, a computer down there that sets the flight pattern of this fixed-wing craft.
Mm-hmm.
And so pre-programmed in there is a ceiling of, I think the guys told me, 395 feet. So we want to keep underneath that 400 feet. Now, potentially, how high could we fly it? Rory, I don't know. What's your experience on how high these could actually fly?
You're basically, you're limited by your battery capacity. So technically, small electric UAV systems have been flown up to 30,000 feet.
30,000 feet?
Yes.
Rory, how easy is it to take one of these drones up that high?
From a technical standpoint, it's not particularly difficult.
Wow.
It's literally a matter of programming the flight and indicating what altitude you'd like to achieve and making sure that you've actually got the battery capacity and endurance to achieve it. Yeah.
Speaking of concerns, Jess from Overland Park joins us now with one of his concerns. He's a private pilot. Jess, good morning.
Thank you. My greatest concern has to do with the use of drones around airports. And when you speak of something going to 30,000 feet, I'm amazed at the capacity and frightened as to what that might mean for a small aircraft.
I am too.
Can sometimes be disabled by a bird, for instance. This would be much more devastating.
Rory?
Yes, it really is a concern, and the fact of the matter is that literally anybody can walk into a hobby store today and purchase a $400-$500 radio-controlled unit and be operating at 2,000 feet the same afternoon. And it really is a matter of educating the public on where they can fly and what the rules of the national airspace are. And we've seen very little from the FAA to address this real at a grassroots level.
Yeah, and Rory, we need to wrap this thing up. So what does the FAA need to do now?
Really now, I think that they have to increase the pace that they're actually working on this policy. They've been working on it for 8 years, and we haven't seen them meet any of the deadlines that they've been given.
Sounds like they need to get about doing some business here. I want to thank Dusty Walter from the University of Missouri and Rory Paul. Again, he's CEO of Volt Aerial Robotics, for taking some time to join us today. Very interesting conversation, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.